We're swapping tales about our love of guidebooks and their impacts on our lives. Meet the former publisher of Time Out in just a minute on today's Travel with Rick Steves. Later in the hour, we'll recommend places you'll always remember when you travel to view the greatest art and architecture in Europe. And a University of Florida professor who won a Pulitzer writing about it pays homage to what he used to call one of the most taken-for-granted places in America, the Gulf of Mexico. For years, when I arrived at Heathrow Airport for a visit to London, I'd buy the latest Time Out magazine. It was a trendy but accessible magazine. It gave me an inside track to London's art and culture scene, with lots of sidebars, perfect for someone looking to give their trip an extra kick. Then the same magazine was popping up all over Europe with the same winning formula. Soon, an entire series of Time Out guidebooks were on the bookshelves. Peter Fines was a publisher at Time Out for 25 years, building that brand and cranking out bestsellers. Peter joins us now to talk about guidebooks. Pete, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Now, this is a few years ago because Time Out went out of business, what, a decade ago or something?
Well, the guidebooks dwindled, although they were carried on by under license. And I think there's still a couple that appear every now and again, but they're nothing like what they once were.
Now, I remember I was just building my little guidebook world, and I was thinking, God, this Time Out formula, it's going to be tough to compete with. There was something about it that was really sophisticated and more immediate. What was your vision? How did that come about, the Time Out series?
Well, we evolved out of the weekly magazine, so it just sort of emerged in a natural, organic way that what we would do, we would use local authors. And we would go to the city and we would find the local expert on film or restaurants or bars or theatre or sightseeing. And because they lived in that city, but we brought our kind of outsider perspective, we felt that that worked really well, because that's what people want in the end from a guidebook, is to feel that they're getting to the real essence of a city and they're going to find the little bar down the little alleyway that no one else knows about other than the people who live there.
I think that was probably the little magic juice there, was to take that local expertise and sort of the immediacy in the front of a magazine, but then reconfigure it in a guidebook.
Yes, it was. That was the magic of them, I suppose, which is that they were written by locals who really cared about telling you what was special about the place they had chosen to live in.
Peter Fines is joining us from the BBC in London for a look at the value of guidebooks, even when they get old and musty. Peter's the author of A Thing of Beauty, Travels in Mythical and Modern Greece. And books he wrote before that, from his rambles in the English countryside, brought him critical acclaim. You'll find links to Peter's earlier interviews with us on these topics with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Now, you had all those years, 25 years of experience with Time Out, and now you've written some beautiful books on your own. You've written A Thing of Beauty about travels in mythical and modern Greece. You've written a book called Footnotes, which is a journey around Britain in the company of the great writers. Where's your travel writer heart now? Is it in publishing or is it in writing?
I think I've become a writer now. It was a difficult transition, and I still have a guidebook heart in me. And I want to, part of the thing about guidebook people is they want to tell other people what's exciting about a place. That hasn't left me at all. You know, we can rant on for hours, can't we, as guidebook writers, about you must go to this thing, you must see this. And that's just something you're born with as a natural guidebook writer. You can't ever escape that. So all my books that I've written since have that element to them. But at the same time, I'm really relieved that I don't have to round up the best hotels of Prague anymore.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because for years, I sort of almost prided myself in writing information in my first books that was broader and more timeless than, you know, hours of entry and what does it cost and is it closed on Monday and you know, where's the best little corner bistro? And then I realized for my work, that's really what people want, is all of this immediate listing kind of stuff. And it puts a lot of tedium into your work, but it lets you provide for that need among travelers. But you managed, with the books you've written lately, to write like guidebooks in disguise. You wrote a book, A Thing of Beauty, helping people travel around Greece, being mindful and tuned into the rich heritage of the ancient Greek myths. And then you wrote the footnotes around traveling around Britain as if you have for your tour guide the great writers. So you have managed with these books to kind of have that utopian writer's sort of a niche where you don't need to know what time is the museum closed and how much is the tourist menu if you arrive early. But you get to write, I think, more fundamentally. It's kind of a great niche.
Well, I'm indulging myself, I suppose. But also, when I wrote my book about Greece, I was following a second century guidebook writer, Pausanias, second century BC. So guidebook writers have been around forever. And it's interesting to read him, this 2,000-year-old guidebook writer, because he exhibits all the same traits that most of us guidebook writers exhibit. You know, he is very pedantic at times, but also very excited about what he has to tell you. And that's the art, isn't it?
It's interesting because I'm so thankful I've got a great publisher and Bill Newlin at Avalon, and he is obsessed with old guidebooks, and he could almost open up a museum in his library at home. Mm. And I understand you have a similar obsession with old guidebooks. What is it about old guidebooks for publishers?
I love old guidebooks, and sadly I don't have a copy of Pausanias in the original, but I do have some beautiful old early 20th century guidebooks. It's partly the maps, it's the detail, it's also thrilling to unfurl a map from a 1923 Blue Guide to London, which I have, and on it is a map of London Zoo, which has things marked like the Gnu enclosure, and it's just so evocative of what London was once like, and they had such confidence to say that there is the Gnu enclosure, and it will always be there. And sadly, it's not, but that's what it is. You can open up an old guidebook, and that world comes rushing in at you, the language, but the maps in particular.
I've done that. I've opened up a 100-year-old guidebook and marveled at how lovingly done the maps are. A lot of times you fold those maps out and you think, how did they even make this book in an efficient way to resell it when you've got this map that folds out? And it's a work of art. I feel like I'm supposed to be wearing white mittens or something so I don't
to handle it. Sadly, none of us can do this anymore. And so Bill Newlin, your publisher, will be saying if you try any fold-out maps, he'll have harsh words to say about the bottom line.
But they loved those quality books. It's just, it was from another age, I think, when people got elegance and quality out of the actual tangible book they're reading, instead of, jumping online and finding the world at their fingertips that way.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed the change even in the period you've been doing guidebooks, but I certainly noticed it. Our first guidebooks in the mid-1980s, we put an awful lot of care and attention into them that we really couldn't afford to put in later. You know, the cost of print soared and the book sales have obviously diminished.
My early books had rounded corners. I remember my publisher spent 10 cents a book to round those corners, and finally they had
absolutely right. I think you should bring that back and put in a little ribbon as well, which
that
people
sort
used
of
to
a
love.
Ribbon in a book. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Peter Fiennes, kind of for the love of guidebooks. Peter, for 25 years, was a publisher at Time Out. Lately, he's moved beyond publishing and he's just writing books that fit his passions. He's written a book called A Thing of Beauty, travels in mythical and modern Greece, and he's written a book called Footnotes, a journey around Britain in the company of great writers. Peter, a lot of people say, guidebooks are dying out. You know, you can get all that information with crowdsourcing sites and so on. And a whole generation of people, I think, are getting up on Yelp or TripAdvisor or whatever and finding out where to eat when they're in Paris. What's your take on the trajectory of guidebooks and how people in the future will get information for their travels?
I still love the feel and smell of print. I still love, if a book didn't exist, you'd probably want to invent it. It's very portable. Mm-hmm. You can flick through it. You can find what you want very easily. It's a lovely thing. There are generations of people who still want to take books with them.
Yeah.
And I don't think the smartphone has superseded that yet. Although, obviously, the market has shrunk enormously and Time Out are not doing their guides so much anymore and others aren't. Mm. So the market has shrunk, but there's still always, there's lots of people who love the book. And there are reasons for that, because it's extremely, it's cheap technology and it's extremely useful.
To me, a big challenge for travelers is, in the old days, there was not enough information. We just need information. Now there's a glut of information, and you really need to have that information curated when so much of it is crowdsourcing stuff and people who have been to Paris once in their life feel like they know where the best little coffee shop is.
Yes, I think that's what you're looking for, is someone you trust. It's bewildering, the amount of information out there. And some of it does seem to work. You know, if enough people are saying enough things about this particular hotel or bar, then you can sort of glean the truth about the thing. But at the same time, as you say, there are voices that you trust who are curating the information and presenting it in a way that you, the reader, have grown to appreciate. People do tend to gravitate time and again to the brands or the people that they know and they've grown up with.
And each guidebook has a personality. Your Time Out books had a personality. For some people, it was just too arty and it was too trendy and it was too young. Other guidebooks are for people who want to stay out late and gamble and drink. And other guidebooks are for people who just love art. So it's not a qualitative thing. It's just, I think, as a smart traveler, you got to find the right information that fits your travel dreams.
I totally agree. And also, it's interesting that when a travel publisher tries to please all of those different segments, they tend to fail. Once you've found what you do well, then you want to keep on doing it well, and then you will endure, we hope.
Peter, it's been so fun just to compare notes as fellow travel writers. You know, for a long time, I've said if you want to travel smart, you can. You just got to equip yourself with good information and expect it to work. What's your advice for somebody that wants to, you know, the trip's a big deal. They've waited, they've saved, now they're going to take this trip that they've always wanted to go. And really, the quality of that experience is really up to them. What's your advice for getting the most out of the information and having the best trip?
Oh, enjoy your planning. I think that's the main thing to take on board, because before you go, there's so much you can do online and thinking about where you're going to first spend your time. But then find your preferred guidebook, whoever that might be, and take that with you and enjoy it then, and be prepared for the unexpected. You know, don't try and plan every last minute of your trip. Be ready for things to happen to you.
I guess that any good guidebook writer would say, hey, when serendipity presents itself, put the guidebook down and run with it.
Absolutely. Once you're in the right bar or the right restaurant and someone comes up to you and say, hey, we're all going here next, this is going to be amazing, then I think you should probably plunge right in.
You don't get out your guidebook and think, is that a good bar?
No, you could read about it in the guidebook when you're in the bar and think, well, they got this wrong or got this right. Thank you.
Good advice. Peter Fiennes, thanks so much, and happy travels.
Thank you very much.
What's in a name? Well, whatever you want to call it, we'll look for the real beauty of the Gulf of Mexico next on Travel with Rick Steves.